Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 I don't know how it's possible, but there's so many young people here today. Is there no school? No school? There's school. You're skipping school. Going late or skipping? Going late. Okay, I'll try to end timely so you don't miss too much. We're going to read this morning from one of the final verses of chapter 24 entitled The Renunciation of Kardama Muni. And the text number, chapter 24, text 45. If you have your little handheld device and you want to look at the verse. 3, 24, 45. This whole chapter is a description of Kardama Muni, the transcendental pure devotee of the Lord who had as his son an incarnation of the personality of Godhead, Kapila Dev. He was a pure devotee even before and certainly during, and now it's after. So the language of this particular verse is interesting. That is, he became a perfected soul. He was already a perfected soul. And to maintain the exemplary behavior of Vanaprastha at the Potomac Temple, the reading from 11th canto section where Krishna is describing the Varnashram system, and the verse yesterday morning was the Vanaprastha, from the Vanaprastha section. Vanaprastha means, Vana means forest, going to the forest and taking extreme vows, at least in Satyayuga. That's what Kardama had done. This is Satyayuga, where dhyana or meditation is the means of perfection. So he's gone to the forest to engage in dhyan, meditation upon Lord Vishnu, who is his son. But he's showing by example. This is what somebody does when they are strict followers of the Varnashram system. Even a pure devotee is showing by example how to. So he's requested permission from his son, the personality of Godhead, and the personality of Godhead has granted him benediction and permission and given benedictions, and so now he's in the forest. He left his ashram with Devahuti. The daughters, nine daughters, have already been married, so it just left as the son, younger brother of the nine daughters. And so it's Devahuti and Kapila Dev, and off he goes to the forest. And so this verse is describing the consciousness, the attainment that Kardama Muni experienced. And it starts with a well-known phrase in the Bhagavatam, Vasudeva Bhagavati.
Vasudeva Bhagavati.
Who knows the other verse? Bhakti Yoga Prayojataha Janayati Ashu Vairagyam Jnanam Cha Yadahai Tukam, Canto 1, Chapter 2. It's part of the poetry of the Bhagavatam. He, Kardama Muni, achieved that. Vasudeva Bhagavati. Bhakti Yoga Prayojataha, completely absorbed in Bhakti Yoga, and where transcendental knowledge and detachment arose. But he was already complete with knowledge and complete with detachment. But that's the phrase, Vasudevi Bhagavati. Sarva-gya, the syllable G-J-N-A, gya, means to know. So he, Karma, didn't become all-knowing, but he became conscious of one who is all-knowing. That's Supersoul, we'll hear in the purport. So Sarva-gya, Pratyag, Atmani. Pratyag, Atmani. Pratyagatmi means the soul that's within everyone. Supersoul. The supersoul is the supreme soul that's within every individual soul. Not just within the body, but within the individual soul that's within the body. Can we all move forward a little bit? Because it will help. Could everybody move forward a little bit? That will help. Thanks. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Much appreciated. Okay, so Sarva Ge Pratyag Atmani. Then Parena, we're going to hear in the purport about this word Parena. Parena has to do with para, transcendental. Parena. Bhakti Bhavena, we'll hear about that word. Labdha Atma, he became situated in the self. Labdha means to obtain. And Labdha Atma, he became situated in self-realization, which means God-realization, because you don't have self-realization without God-realization. Say it negatively. The idea of self-realization without God-realization is illusion. Say it positively. Self-realization means God-realization. It's a subset of God-realization. Then you can understand the nature of the self. And mukta bandhana. That's the last phrase. Mukta bandhana. Liberation from bandhana, the bondage of material contamination. So here's the translation. Karamuni thus became liberated from conditioned life, mukta bandhana, and became self-situated, labdha atma, in transcendental devotional service to the personality of Godhead, Vasudevi Bhagavati, the omniscient supersoul, that sarva-gya pratyagatmani. He became fully Krishna conscious, conscious of the omniscient supersoul within everyone. So this is a nice image, like a snapshot of where he was. Towards the very end of this whole section is Devahuti achieving the same thing. It's a much slower motion, step by step by step. But we're here, it's just like a snapshot. These are things that he's experiencing, or qualifications that he has. Purport. Three paragraphs. When one engages in the transcendental devotional service of the Lord, one becomes aware that his constitutional position, comma, as an individual soul, comma, is to be eternally a servitor of the Supreme Lord Vasudeva. Negatively, self-realization does not mean that because the Supreme Soul and individual soul are both souls, they are equal in every respect. No. The individual soul is prone to be conditioned, and the Supreme Soul is never conditioned. There's a big difference. There's many. That's one. when the conditioned soul realizes that he is subordinate to the Supreme Soul, his position is called Labdhatma. Labdhatma, self-realization, situated in the self. Same language as from earlier, first canto verses, situated in the self, means situated in the Supreme Self and situated in the knowledge of the self in relation to the Supreme Self. That's situated in the self, labdha atma. Or mukta bandhana, freedom from material contamination. Material contamination continues as long as one thinks that he is as good as the Supreme Lord or equal with him. The condition, this condition, that is, thinking oneself equal, absolutely equal, equal in all respects. You know, the Sanskrit phrase is Kevala Advaita. You recognize that one? That's Shankara's teachings. Advaita is non-dual, and Kevala Advaita is absolutely non-different. Absolute non-dualism. You are Brahman, and there isn't anything else. There isn't a supreme Brahman and Brahman, there's just Brahman. There's absolute Brahman, Kevala Advaita. So, material contamination continues as long as one thinks that he is as good as the Supreme Lord or equal with him. This condition is the last snare of Maya. Maya always influences the conditioned soul, even after much meditation and speculation. If one continues to think himself one with the Supreme, it is to be understood that he is still in the last snares of the spell of Maya. Second of three paragraphs. The word parena, remember that one? Parena bhakti bhavena. Parena is very significant. Para means, quote, transcendental, untinged by material contamination, unquote. Full consciousness that one is an eternal servant of the Lord is called para-bhakti. If one has any identification with material things and executes devotional service for attainment of some material gain, that is called vidha-bhakti. Contaminated bhakti. A bhakti is pure, but one's consciousness may be contaminated. So it's describing the consciousness of the individual, not bhakti proper. Because bhakti is pure. One can actually become liberated by execution of para-bhakti. Final paragraph. Another word mentioned here is sarva ge. That's J-N-E, as in ge, but vocative is ge, sarva ge. The supersoul sitting within the heart is all cognizant. He knows. That was the sentence. He knows. I may forget my past activities due to the change of body, but because the Supreme Lord as Paramatma is sitting within me, he knows everything. Semicolon. Therefore, the result of my past karma or past activities is awarded to me. I may forget, but he awards me suffering or enjoyment for the misdeeds or good deeds of my past life. One should not think that he is freed from reaction because he has forgotten the actions of his past life. Reactions will take place, and what kind of reactions there will be is judged by the supersoul, the witness. powerful instructions, instructions of attaining pure devotional service. That's Srimad Bhagavatam. If you remember, those of you that have read first canto Bhagavatam, Vyasadeva, after compiling all the vast body of Vedic literature, he was feeling despondent, bad. And he was puzzled, why am I feeling bad? Why am I feeling this? I'm uncomfortable. And we know what that, if we're honest, we know what that feeling is. And Narada explained to him, it's because you've given too much emphasis on fruitive activities. You've apparently, without sufficient emphasis on transcendental activity, but too much emphasis on fulfilling the desires through karmakanda. Vast portion of the Vedas is like that. So people are already inclined for fruitive activities, and now you've given it, you know, the Vyasadeva rubber stamp. It's authorized. And so they do it, thinking, that's it. And there's a nice verse in chapter 2 of Bhagavad Gita where Krishna says that most people think that's it. The purpose of the Vedas is fulfilling material desires and attaining of heavenly planets, and that's it. There's nothing more. And when somebody comes along and says, no, wait a minute, that's not it. You know, what's wrong with you? You're not being Hindu. You got to be all encompassing and something for everybody. Why are you discriminating like this? This isn't Hindu. It's Bhagavad Gita, and Krishna is very clear about it, but some people can't hear it because they're attached to fruitive activities. So Vyas was feeling dissatisfied that he had done so much of that, he hadn't made this contrasting position to say, one who follows all those things, what's the goal of all those things? Is it simply elevation to a higher standard of material happiness in this life and after this life, and that's it? Is there something more than that? What's beyond that? Is there anything beyond that? Yes, of course there's something beyond. So, therefore, Vyasadeva, from Narada to Vyasadeva, you should compose one literature that's just beyond that. What's beyond that? And now here we're hearing what's beyond that. I mean, what's beyond that is the Upanishads, the Jnana Kanda section of the Vedas, that at least it seems, if one doesn't know what's beyond becoming one with the Supreme, it seems that it's advocating becoming one with the Supreme. Kevala Advaita, absolute monism. And there's different terminologies in the Vedas that seem to indicate that. Ask Shankaracharya, he'll tell you which ones say that. And therefore, one of his policies to promote that notion is making the statement that there are certain verses in the Upanishads that I, Shankaracharya, declare. These are Mahavakyas. They're principal utterances. Vakya means to say, or utter. And Mahavakya, principal messages. Here's one, Aham Brahmasmi. That's it. I am Brahman. And Brahman is everything, and so I'm everything. And anything other than that one thing, that's Maya. And what's Maya? Well, it's just something that doesn't exist. Just doesn't exist. No, we don't say that Maya doesn't exist. Maya exists. It's just the reflection of reality. That's what Maya is. It's like this chair. Not doesn't exist. I'm sitting in it. But it's temporary. You know, it appears to be something. And before it's this something with something else, and after some time it's going to be yet another thing. So it's temporary, but it's not false. You know these phrases. Jagat Mithya. Brahman Satya. Jagat Mithya. I mean, I never went to Shankaracharya school, but just from reading Prabhupada's books, I know that that's how Shankaracharya taught, or followers at least of Shankaracharya taught. Brahman is truth. And what's other than truth? It just doesn't exist. It doesn't exist. The room doesn't exist. You name it. The cars out in the parking lot, they don't exist. You know, the town doesn't exist. The earth doesn't exist. Nothing exists. Doesn't exist. Mithya. There's only one thing that exists. Brahman. The good news is you're Brahman. You're God. Presto. All your problems are solved. Just say, repeat after me. Aham Brahmasmi. Okay. You're ready to go. The Vedas have another section besides that Gyanakanda, and even the Karmakanda and Gyanakanda section, they're understood in the big picture of the Vedas. They're processes to get one to the what's on the other side of sense gratification and thinking oneself to be Brahman. What's on the other side of Maya? What's the reality of which Maya is a reflection? And that's in the language of the Srimad Bhagavatam, that's liberation or mukti. Those of you that are familiar with the makeup of the Bhagavatam, there's two places in the Bhagavatam that identify what are the 10 topics of the Bhagavatam. You can look them up later if you like. It's Canto 2, Chapter 10. In the first two verses, there's 10 topics identified, and number 9 of the 10 is mukti. And then 2.1.6, Shukadeva Goswami says, here's what the Bhagavatam has to say about mukti, and it's svarupena vyavastati, which means svarupa, in your spiritual form, your own form, rupa, not formless, rupa, svarupa, in your own form, vyavastati. What are the activities of living entity in the liberated state? It's on the other side of oneness, it's what you do. What do you do in that state of oneness? You engage in activities in relation to the Supreme, which is in the language of this verse. So this verse is just expanding on what's there in Canto 2, Chapter 10, text 1 through 8 or so, the 10 topics. Or this text number 6 is sorrow, pain of you. It's an important phrase. If you have a word search in your computer, you can put in sorrow, pain of yavastati and see how many times it appears. A lot of times. It's a very important conception. The Bhagavatam is teaching what real liberation is. Just yesterday morning in the Potomac Temple, Nikshayasa, ultimate liberation. Same idea. Or apavarga, ultimate liberation. There's pavarga, and there's apavarga, and there's ultimate apavarga. Pavarga, you know this from Chaitanya Charitamrita, those of you that are a little familiar. Sarvabhuma Bhattacharya, Do you know who is Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya? You've heard his name? Yes? Yes. He was the chief priest of the king. Prataparudra was the king. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was super scholar. The king requested, when Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was elderly, please come to Puri, become my chief priest, I'll give you all facility. You can have thousands and thousands of students and teach them because you're a super scholar. Will you be my chief priest? Yes. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya explained, after he had become a devotee by the mercy of his brother-in-law, Gopinath Acharya and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was objecting, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was objecting to a very important verse found in Brahma's prayers to Krishna. Brahma's prayers to Krishna are Canto 10, Chapter 14, and the particular verse is one of the very much loved verses by the devotees. The verse that says, what do you do when you get a problem? Of course, people here don't know what having a problem looks like, but for those people that know what a problem looks like, what do you do? And the prayer by Lord Brahma says, you accept the problem, you accept the reactions to your past misdeeds without letting your mind go to counteracting the problem. Instead, let your mind go to one thing, and one thing only, the lotus feet of the Personality Godhead. And by so doing, mukti, there's this word, mukti, liberation, mukti pade, sva, dayabhak, you get liberation. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, Vyas made a mistake. What? Vyas doesn't make mistakes. Well, he used this word mukti, mukti pade. And generally, and it's true, when people hear the word mukti, they think of sayuja mukti. Sayuja mukti. Sayuja mukti is you become one with the Supreme. Just exactly the topic here. Lose your identity, become one with the Supreme. You become Supreme. Yay, I'm God. Last snare of Maya. So I don't like that word mukti. You should have said bhakti pade. Because there are five kinds of liberation, one of which is the Sayuja one, and most people think when they hear mukti, they think the Sayuja one. But there's four others. And the four others are, you attain a form like the Personality of Godhead, like in Vaikuntha. You attain the abode of the Personality of Godhead. You attain opulences like the Personality of Godhead. You attain intimate association of the Personality of Godhead. And but most people don't think of those. They think of the liberation kind, the becoming one with. So to avoid confusion, he shouldn't have said mukti pade, he should have said bhakti pade. Lord Chaitanya was so happy. He said, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, that used to be your thing, becoming one with the Supreme. And now you're objecting to Vyasadeva using the word mukti. But there's not a mistake, because who can give mukti? It's only one person, Krishna, Personality of Godhead, only can give mukti. So it's correct. Vyasadeva didn't make a mistake. But congratulations, you're through and through devotee. So when devotees hear the word mukti, like apavarga or nikshayasa, they don't think become one with the Supreme, because that's maya. It's a subtler form of maya than sense gratification. But imagining oneself to be equal in all respects to the Supreme, that's maya. And there's many, but just within the purport, there's one example of the distinction between the individual and the Supreme Soul. There's many, 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 many. Well, one that's mentioned in the purport here is living entities can become fallen or covered and the Supreme Lord can never become fallen or covered or conditioned. There's a name for him, Ajita. He's never becomes covered, never becomes fallen. Never. Cannot be conquered. He can't be conquered by a living entity. Achyuta. He cannot fall. It's not possible. It's not possible. I mean, it's just his quality. Living, the material energy isn't controlling him. He controls the material energy. So even he comes to this world, he's not influenced by Maya. He's in control of Maya. He can enter, he can create the whole cosmic manifestation, then enter into it and remain uncontaminated. A very simple example Prabhupada gives of a governor goes into a prison. He doesn't become a prisoner because he went into the prison. He may go for whatever his purpose. He may go to grant amnesty to a prisoner and say, you're free. You're free to go. A head of state can do like that. But he doesn't become conditioned by the circumstances of the prison. Free to come and go. Prisoners are not. So, achyuta. There's never, the living entity is chyuta, and the Lord is achyuta. Infallible. He can never fall. Well, there's many other distinctions. So, it's correct to make a distinction. And so those who are, it's another phrase that's in the purport, it's important. Prabhupada highlights it. There are circumstances where it's going to come up in chapter 29 of this canto, where bhakti is pure, but consciousness of living entity engaged in bhakti may not be pure. So it describes their consciousness. Here, material consciousness, or vidha bhakti, or bhakti where the consciousness of the individual is mixed. We just yesterday morning in Potomac, there was a description of persons who follow Varnashram for the purpose of achieving Maharloka. Because what's Maharloka? Maharloka is above Swargaloka. It's a higher planet. It's one planetary system above Maharloka, Janloka, Tapaloka, Brahmaloka. It's still within the material world. But those that go to Maharloka, those are persons that they want some material enjoyment mixed with devotion to the Supreme Lord. So if they follow, so one follows the Varnashram system, one follows the Vanaprastha severe austerities. Just like, you know, Vishwamitra, he followed severe austerities. Severe for long periods of time. Again and again and again. But he had this, I want to be honored as a Brahma Rishi. It's not sufficient for me that I just am a Raja Rishi. I want to be a Brahma Rishi. I want to be like Vishishta. It was competition, it was material consciousness. He got over it by the mercy of the Supreme Lord, but initially it's mixed. So the purpose behind, is very important, the purpose behind the activities that we do in devotion, the consciousness behind the activities we do in devotion is very important. And presently it's mixed. Presently it's mixed. So that's what we do mixed, and the outcome is mixed. But the Bhagavatam is encouraging us, all right, now as you're doing the mixed, strive for the unmixed. Strive. And what does unmixed look like? Well, it's, the description is here. That's what the Bhagavatam is doing. It's making a very clear portrayal of unmixed devotion. Very special. Very special. And one of the features of unmixed devotion is you're very clear about the object of devotion and the purpose of the object of devotion. just when we were together in Mayapur, Nyuttama was sharing something that from his experience, you all know Nyuttama because this is his base. One of the things that he does, one of the many things that he does, is he attends for a decade or more, he attends interfaith gatherings. And he feels very strongly, I don't mind sharing on his behalf, that going into the future, the insular nature of the Hare Krishna movement needs to go beyond the insular. In the beginning stages, insular is important. That is to say, when Prabhupada was reaching out to his young Western audience, they needed some boundaries that they wouldn't cross. The example is given just like when you have a small tree. When the city plants a small tree, they put a little fence around it. Because critters can come and, you know, chew away the leaves of that little tree, and then the tree is not going to grow. But after some time, when the tree at the, you know, little fence has protected the tree or seedling, then you can remove the fence because now it's strong and can withstand all kinds of things. So in the beginning, the insular nature of the Hare Krishna movement was appropriate. And at least some members of our organization, those that are like Anuttama, you know, really advanced in their, matured in their Krishna consciousness, some of our members need to interact with people that are not, you know, just Hare Krishna people. And so one of the mediums for that, there's many, one of the mediums is interfaith. So he was sharing, after going, you know, to this interfaith thing for some period of time, a high-ranking officer of, I forget which Christian denomination, said to him, you know, we always emphasize that God loves you. And I've understood from hearing from you, your emphasis is loving God and serving Him. I like it. So in that way, who knows, maybe when he's preaching from the place that he preaches from, he'll start to share the message of serving God. But then comes this idea of what is unmixed service. And another one is, who is God? Not like, you know, the position, the title, but who is he? What is his personality? What is his form, his qualities, activities, etc.? Who is God? And understanding who is God will help enormously in wanting to serve him. Say it negatively. If you don't have a clear idea of who is God, it's a little difficult to be really clear of how to serve him. We'll just take a little example. Very, very simple, practical example. Supposing they're in the community here, you're developing a friendship with somebody. And you say, could you come have dinner with us one evening? Well, that's very nice. Sure, we'll make some arrangement. And then supposing the food that's prepared is something to your liking, but it's something that's just like they're allergic to, or it's bad for their health, or something like that. But you don't bother to ask them, you know, what would you like? Or do you have dietary restrictions, and, you know, what's your... No discussion, just you make what you like. I mean, you know, the gesture is nice, but it's not really what service is. Yeah? They'll find out what they like and make your best effort to prepare something that. So it's the gesture of inviting a family to come to your home and be together. That's nice. And more than nicer, is you prepare what they like. Because that's what you're inviting for, is a nice exchange when you show that you care. So you, taking that simple example, what is Krishna like? Well, you have to know something about Krishna. Otherwise, you don't know what Krishna likes. There's some, like, there are some standard things, like Krishna likes when people are clean. He'll be clean. And Krishna likes when people don't lie. You know, the nishedhas, the prohibitions. Anyway, you get the idea. Having more understanding about the personality of Godhead helps one understand how to live one's life, if you want to, that's unmixed. And just do that, because you're cultivating a relationship of loving service. For bhakti to grow, for this para bhakti that's being spoken of in the purport, it's more than it helps. It's essential to have some understanding of the personality of Godhead. And how do you find that out? Well, through somebody that knows. And one of the ways to know is through scriptures that reveal the personality of Godhead. That's what the Bhagavatam is. It's not Karmakanda Gyanakanda. It's revealing the personality of Godhead and what he likes. What is he like? And those who serve him with pure devotion, like Kardamuni, what does that look like? Just so I can, I'm not there, but I can have a target to shoot for. I can have a goal that directionally looks like this. And if I don't know, then I may go over that way. It's like a ship. A good example. You want to go from by ship from New York to London. But you don't know exactly where London is. It's that way. So supposing you're off by 1 degree. You're not going to land in London. Who knows where you're going to land? Maybe in Norway or something. Because it was just, you know, a little off, but over some distance is... So we need to be clear what Krishna is and what pure devotion is. And the Bhagavatam is providing us with that. It's acknowledged. We're not there. But it gives us a clear, you know, direction to move in. And this is, it's principle based. It's not Satya Yuga. We're not going to go to the forest and do what Kardamuni did. We're not going to do what Dhruva Maharaj did or others that achieve spiritual perfection in Satya Yuga. It's not possible for us. But principle wise, the Bhagavatam is giving us, there's detail and there's principle. Just like, I'll end with this. Just like this phrase, Sarvage Pratyag Atmani. It follows the Vasudeva Bhagavati. So what, conscious of in devotion to Sarvage, one who knows everything, who is Pratyag Atmani, who's within the heart of everyone. So there's this saying that one who has a spiritual master becomes the knower of everything. There's a Vedic statement like that. So, I heard this when I was a new devotee. I liked it. 26 Second Avenue. Somebody said, Swamiji, I heard that one who is a spiritual master, he becomes the knower of everything. So, how many windows are there in the Empire State Building? And Prabhupada's reply, how many drops of water are there in a mirage? Spontaneous. He didn't have it prepared. It just... Then that the spiritual master knows everything means that whatever he needs to serve Krishna properly, Krishna provides. Sarva gay, pratyagatmani. If you're Krishna conscious, you'll know whatever Krishna needs, gives to you to do your service to Krishna. That's what you know. And that's knowing everything. Because everything is to know Krishna and whatever you need to serve Krishna. So supposing you're not a pure devotee, you're on the path. I know a few devotees that are on the path. They're not yet pure devotees. So, like all of us. So now, what do you do? Well, you strive to be Krishna conscious and following instructions found in the scriptures, you know, we're guided by Guru Sadhu Shastra. We need to know what does Shastra say, what does Guru say, what does Sadhu. And we make our best effort and we're guided by that. And if we're one degree off course, Krishna will, you know, help you get on course. He's the course correction. Recalculating. Okay, now turn left and turn right. He'll connect you to the right activity, even if you, with all sincerity, but if you don't have that sincerity, with all sincerity, you're striving singularly to please Krishna, he'll give you a course correction. And if not, it's not what you want, and Krishna doesn't interfere. He may, because he's sarvagay, he may, you know, there may be some inconvenience. There's different kinds of inconveniences, but for those that are striving for pure devotion, there may be some inconvenience that's built in to help you with course correction, not for punishment. But there are persons that just, they're mixed, and so they go to Maharloka, or they go to whatever other destination because there's a mix of desire. The good news is Krishna accepts the service that's rendered and he'll help you come to him. Even there's a mix. We're not lost because we're mixed. Krishna is very kind. That's our good fortune. Okay, there's just two more verses, two or three more verses in this section. We'll see if we can finish up tomorrow and the next day. Any discussion? Yeah?
Maharaj, as the example that you gave, like serving, inviting somebody home, like that example, one thing that comes to me is like the Trinadapi Sunichena verse, where we have to respect all the other living entities. My question is, Maharaj, like when it comes to respect, sometimes I feel other people have a different expectations and they feel that we are not respecting properly. So I wanted to know what is that striving for the unmixed, what will be pleasing to Krishna, like how should I respect others practically?
Okay, I think I got your question. And first and foremost is that your intention, strive to make your intention to please Krishna. Then following that one comes the other ones. That is, one of the ways to please Krishna is to serve the devotee of Krishna. And it's true what you say. Sometimes when we're attempting to serve the devotee of Krishna, our intention isn't understood. Sometimes. More than sometimes. If we're, go back to the first one, if our intention is to please Krishna, Krishna knows. Now the other devotee may not know, and maybe we're just, you know, we got it wrong. The intention was misdirected. It wasn't a wrong intention, but misdirected. And so, depending upon the other devotee that, you know, didn't understand what your intention was, yet there's, depending upon the devotee, some discussion. And there may be different degrees of openness from the other devotees to help the course correction. You know, that's based on trust. If they say to you, you know, something, when you did this, I felt uncomfortable because I felt disrespected or not properly respected. They may just let it go. They may, it just depends on the relationships. But so the course correction feature is the relationships with the devotees for the purpose of pleasing Krishna. Now, you know, before you go outside the home, you can start just within the home, between the members of the family. There may not be a clear understanding of intention of trying to serve Krishna, favorably. So that's a good place to start, making those communications clear. And once the skills of based on trust, it's not a small thing, it's a big thing, based on trust, then we can understand one another as a family. And then you can start, the concentric circle can expand. And some people are less inclined and some people are more inclined to have those kinds of communications. So you have those communications when you can have those communications. And just accept it's just part of life in the material world. Your intentions are not going to be understood always. Just how it is. You don't stop acting. You go back and hit the reset on, am I interested in pleasing Krishna? Or am I interested in something, there's a mix other than pleasing Krishna. An expression one devotee who's very, very conscious on this particular item expresses that there's life of devotion is an ongoing, continuous series of recalibrations of what's the goal and what's inside my heart and consciousness towards the goal. You refine the goal and refine the consciousness. An ongoing series of refinements and recalibrations. And one should not get tired of it. Oh, I've done too much of it or enough of it. I need a vacation. Anything else? Yes? To her question.
The basic information.
Basic information.
So, what Krishna likes?
What Krishna likes? Well, read chapter 12 and the final verses of chapter 12, and he's very explicit about what he likes. Very explicit. Read it. This pleases me very much. Read it. It's right there. Chapter 12. The last series of verses. There's many other places, but it's all packed up right in that one section. Yes.
Maharaj, two questions. One is just could you explain a little bit about impersonalist, Mayavadi, and Brahmavadi? When these terms come, a little bit confused.
It's not, this distinction is not something that Srila Prabhupada placed big emphasis upon. But there is a distinction. A very practical distinction is the four Kumaras and Shukadeva Goswami. They were Brahmavadis. Vada means doctrine. And they were realized in Brahman. They became very quickly devotees just by hearing about Krishna because they had no aversion to Krishna. They just had Brahman realization. That's Brahman realization. But Brahman is the effulgence of Parabrahman. They had no difficulty going to Parabrahman consciousness from Brahman consciousness. That's Brahmavadi. And then a Mayavadi is Krishna's form is Maya, Krishna's personality is Maya. Maya means doesn't exist, by the way, for a Mayavadi. It's word jugglery, philosophized atheism. That's a Mayavadi. Where reality with a capital R is, I am Brahman, you're Brahman, we're all Brahman, and there's nothing else but Brahman. That's a Mayavadi. Not what scripture says. It's word jugglery. And it's atheism. It's explicit atheism. Not theism. It's Maya. That's Mayavadi. Okay.
In 8th chapter, when Arjuna asks this question to Krishna to define what is Brahman and all that, Krishna says something, maybe I didn't understand properly, that living entity is Brahman.
Living entity is Brahman. And there's Parabrahman. We don't say Krishna was wrong. We're Brahman. We don't say the Vedas are wrong. Aham Brahmasmi. Mm-hmm. But we don't deny there's Parabrahman. Okay. We're in the category of Brahman. Tiny. And he's Vibhu. We're Anu.
So the term that's used in this verse today, Labdha, that is a recognition that
yes.
I am servant.
No. Labdha, it's implicit. It's not explicit. Implicit is, if I understand I am Atma or Brahman, implicit is I am part of the Parabrahman. They say it explicitly, Mame Vangsa Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana. That's explicit. So implicit is Lamta Atma. I'm situated in self-realization. Implied is the part is in relation to the whole. That's who I am. That's self.
So, in that context, when we talked about Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya getting the mercy of devotee, he from impersonalist to devotee,
yes.
he got an understanding that there is a Parabrahman,
yes.
I am the...
Yeah, he saw the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
Okay.
He understood you're not just a sannyasi teaching Vedanta Sutra and the Atmarama verse, you're the personality of Godhead. And he showed him the form of the personality of Godhead. He became his devotee of the personality of Godhead, beyond Brahman. Because the other is denial of the form of the personality of Godhead. Avajananti mam mudha. Manushim tanamashatam. Such Mayavadis say Manushim tanamashatam. Brahman has assumed a form. Krishna, it's word jugglery, but Krishna has a very subtle form of Maya. That's the form. Because actually, it's Brahman within that form. That's the absolute truth. Because all there is the absolute truth. It's very exhaustive. The body of Krishna is an upadi. Ours is gross, his is subtle, but it's an upadi. A designation, a covering of reality. I don't want to go into what Mayavadi talk, but
thank you.
Yes?
Hearing,
I'm listening.
Nandamukhi and myself were hearing second chapter of second canto. So she asked a question.
Who, she?
Nandamukhi.
Okay.
How is it different from nirvana? The Labdho Shanti is a state of consciousness of the transcendentalist, and he doesn't create purpose.
Well, it's the difference between Brahman and Bhagavan. You know the difference? Bhagavan is the personal conception, and Brahman is the all-pervasive presence of spirit conception, impersonal conception. And if it stops there, it's incomplete. Doesn't mean it's wrong, just incomplete. There is such a thing. Just like this question about Brahmavadi. There is such a thing as Brahman. And one can have, as Shukadeva Goswami and the four Kumaras had, realization of Brahman. That's incomplete. And the complete form is Swarupena Vyavastati. You're familiar with that phrase? Yes? So that's the distinction. It can be incomplete or complete. It can be Brahman realization or Bhagavan realization. And the term can apply to both, but in one case it's incomplete, in the other case it's complete. Context sensitive. There's bliss in Brahman, but it's tiny. The bliss, the like the water in the hoof print of a calf compared to an ocean. There can be water in the hoof print of a calf. Tiny. So there can be ananda from Brahman realization, Brahmananda. And then there's the bliss of loving service, Paramananda. A drop of water compared to the ocean. So it's incomplete or complete.
So, the word nirvana, is the meaning distracted by Buddhism?
No, it's a Vedic term. It existed before Buddhism existed. He rejected the Vedas and took terms from the Vedas for his convenience. Nirvana, you read in Bhagavad Gita chapter 6, verses 21 through 23, describes what is samadhi, and in there the word nirvana is indicated. Not in the verses, it's and nirvana, Prabhupada gives the translation, quote, cessation of material existence. So devotees experience nirvana. That's, you know, karamuni, material existence finished. Finished. And then beyond, what's beyond nirvana? Swarupena Vyavastati. Then so that's complete nirvana, beyond, you know, the limited one. Yes, last question, we're going to end.
So, Brahman realization is like a stepping stone to understand Paramatma realization, or like is Bhakti Yoga process takes directly to Paramatma realization?
This is an academic question, but I'll answer it. It's something like Prabhupada's comparison is when it's the dark of night and there's no sunlight, darkness is pervasive. Then in the morning there's dawn. You can't see the sun directly, but there's the light of the sun. So that's like Brahman realization. You don't see the sun yet, but there's the light of the sun, so we know the sun is soon to rise. And then, after some time, the sun rises. We can see the sun directly, not just the light of the sun. That's likened to Paramatma realization. And then, more complete, is the sun god, from which the sun receives its light, and the light that illuminates the day, as opposed to darkness. So realizing the sun god is likened to Bhagavan realization compared to Paramatma and Brahman realization. So it's gradual, but for you and for me, attention goes to the personality. It's not. The misconception is, first you got to be Brahman realized, then you got to be Paramatma realized, then you got to be a devotee. You got to go through those steps. That's a misconception. From the get-go, when it's the dark of night, we turn our attention to the personality of Godhead. We don't zero in on the Brahman and then zero in on the Paramatma and then the Bhagavan conception. We don't do that. From the get-go, from the very inception, Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. What do we know in your darkness of ignorance? But on the authority of Scripture we know. And with faith in the authority of Scripture as the way to know, we can progress. So that's what we do. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada. Jai.